This is Pause and Listen. We're going to talk about three pieces of new classical music that we think you should hear and that you can find right here on the internet. If you've listened already, you may have some thoughts that may or may not line up with ours, or you may want our thoughts to think about as you listen after the episode. What you can also do is pause us right after we listen to each piece and come back when you're done, and you'll be listening right along with us. Joining us this episode is the classically trained, still performing classical music, but in their band, they perform feminist pop music, Outcalls, who are sopranos Britt Olsen-Ecker and Melissa Wimbish. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, the pieces we're going to talk about today, I kind of want to give you guys a choice about who wants to go first.
Ooh. I'll go first.
Okay, Britt, what have you got for us?
I have The Birth Project, which is a song cycle written by Libby Larson. Melissa and I performed this piece last year, I want to say, in the beginning of the year. And it's a great piece. It's for two sopranos and piano. Lots of different people wrote words for the piece. And it's basically a song cycle about having babies. Super cool. 12 songs for two sopranos and piano. Libby Larson, I guess, asked a bunch of her friends to contribute some words for this piece. And it deals with a ton of the thematic materials regarding birth, whether it's loss, having a baby, the experience of giving birth. What else? What other like thematic elements?
Well, I think we can just find out when we listen to the piece, and
exactly.
We'll come back and talk about it. So if you've listened to this piece already, great. We'll be right back. Otherwise, you can pause us and go listen, or listen after you've heard us talk about it. Either way, we're going to listen to this right now and be back to talk about it here on Pause and Listen. Libby Larson, along with Stephen Paulus, is one of the founders of the American Composers Forum and is one of the unfortunately few women who show up in Carole Kimball's anthology of song composers. Welcome back to Pause and Listen. We've been listening to The Birth Project by Libby Larson with Outcalls, Britt Olsen-Ecker, and Melissa Wimbish. And Britt brought the piece, so Melissa, I want to hear your opinion first. And of course, you guys have both sung this piece together, so
right.
I think you've got plenty to say about it.
Definitely. Well, we're not the ones singing. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
just so there's no confusion.
They didn't record that one.
No, we didn't record that. But we have performed it together, and it was really fun. It was fun to stage it because there were some really funny moments. However, I remember staging it and being directed to waddle in this way that was like, "What is this really how pregnant people walk?" And I think Britt can vouch
it's not.
For, no.
I have firsthand experience now.
Mm-hmm.
I think there certainly is a change in your gait, and you don't notice it because it's so gradual. Of course, like when we were doing this, neither of us were pregnant or had been pregnant. But speaking from experience now, you just are adapting to what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that I've asked my husband if my gait has changed, and he said, yeah, I think so. I think you do have a different sort of walk. But, you know, to the naked eye, I think I even asked you. And
yeah.
I think you were like, no.
I don't notice.
And it's always written into scripts for, like, I remember a Breaking Bad episode. It's when Skyler had just gone back to work for mm-hmm. Beneke Fabricators, and she's talking about, like, waddling to the bathroom, or, like, Ted put her in an office that's waddling distance from the bathroom
waddling
or something.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I mean, obviously, I can never experience that myself, so... fortunately we have, you know, firsthand experience
right.
in the room.
Yes.
Yeah, there are clues. I think that, like, you know, there are subtle things that you can do when you stage something like this
mm-hmm.
that don't include doing something so extreme or fabricated in a way that it makes it look silly.
Yeah.
Because the reality is it's your body is changing. But like hand on the back to support the back, like certain little things are
mm-hmm.
better than just like you know, waddling from side to side.
The extreme waddle. Well, I do though appreciate that there is a song cycle that exists about pregnancy.
Yes.
And not this obscure artsy way. It's like, no, this is about being fucking pregnant.
Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. actually very honest. It goes into pretty intimate detail about
it.
And we're talking about like the artsy perspective about it. And the first thing that listening to this piece made me think of was Frauenleben und Leben, mm-hmm. where it's a piece that is written, composed by a man, mm-hmm. to poetry by a man, mm-hmm. about the life of a woman who is like
love and life.
Yeah.
Right.
Idolizing her husband who dies at the end, and it's so, so sad.
Right.
And I think this is a much more honest portrayal. I mean, not least because it is composed by women and the text is all by women,
right.
Who probably have experiences with being pregnant themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love that piece. I love that the Schumann. I do. And it wouldn't be such a target if there were more pieces that allowed women to be heard, you know,
because right.
you know, it's a cool piece, a cool perspective. Well, more than cool, it's definitely a classic for a reason. But no, this is real, and it's I mean, you sing the word enema in this song. So
oh my god, there that's you go. Right, let's try an enema.
Oh, yeah, I wonder, like, if Clara Schumann might have been better suited to compose Frauenlieben und Leben.
Mm. Oh, totally.
Being a woman herself.
Yeah, what would that perspective be like? That would be very interesting.
And what's the German word for enema? I think that's really
That's the crux of this discussion.
Ich weiß viele Deutsch, aber ich weiß nicht das deutsche Wort für enema.
Enema.
Ich glaube, dass das ist enema.
Yeah, maybe it is. Or something very long, like
enema. Yes, right, exactly. Some like 15-syllable word.
Let's see. Arschlochdusch.
I love that you're trying.
It's great.
So our next piece is another one that you have sung, and Melissa, yeah, you brought this one in. How about you give us a little bit of an introduction to this one?
Sure. Songs from the F Train is a piece composed by Gilda Lyons, and it is set to the poetry of three students from Brooklyn, and their kids. They want to say their ages 9 to 12. So it was commissioned by American Opera Projects. And it's a really fabulous piece that highlights this great poetry.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and listen to it. And I'm finding out that I've been pronouncing Gilda Lyons' first name wrong.
It might be Gilda.
Yeah, that's what I thought, Gilda, at first. I have talked to her husband numerous times.
Oh, did he say Gilda?
Funny.
No. I've never talked to him about Gilda or Gilda or however she pronounces her name.
I assumed Gilda because she's American, but Gilda would be...
That's true, yeah.
Our Italian opera heritage.
She is also a singer, so there's that.
That's true.
Anyway, we're going to listen to Songs from the F Train and be right back to talk about the piece if you have listened to it already. As I said before, that's great. If you're going to listen to it now or later, that's great too. And we will be back to talk about it in just a bit on Pause and Listen. In addition to being a composer, Gilda Lyons is also a soprano who has commissioned numerous works from many living composers. Welcome back to Pause and Listen. We have been listening to Songs from the F Train by Gilda Lyons. And Britt, what's your take on... Have you sung this as well?
No, I have not.
But Melissa has. Okay.
Yes.
So, what's your take on this
piece?
Wow.
Okay, this is my first time hearing it. It's fun. I can see why people enjoy the piece and are drawn to it, especially because I think the text is really interesting that it's, you know, written by students.
Yeah.
What age are the students?
I think they're
middle
9,
school?
12.
Oh, even younger.
Yeah, they're just kids.
Yeah, they're kids.
12, and 9.
Which I think is really cool.
And they're all girls.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. It's cute.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there are some funny moments. I do appreciate like short little ditties.
Yeah, I think those pieces were really fun.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have described pieces as fun because I didn't want to have the first thing I said about a piece be negative.
Mm-hmm.
sounds great.
But that is not the case with this piece for me. I think the pieces are actually good. I think this is a good piece of music, and it is also fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I was saying when we were listening to that, this is like almost poppy.
It is very poppy.
It is very. Especially the second piece.
Not even almost.
And I want to say even in her bio, there's something that describes her as like some sort of music theater.
Seems like she writes for a lot of different things.
Yes.
I was going to say there was definitely, especially in the first song, mm-hmm. there was definitely mm-hmm. an element of musical theater
yes.
to it.
That's my favorite
one. The range.
Mm-hmm.
My right. God. I'm like, she's singing low right. and then she's going high. It's like, oh my God, it's crazy.
Right. And it says on here, on the score, I have the score in front of me. I want to say there, it does specifically say mezzo. Oh no, it says voice and piano.
Hmm.
But so I believe the women in both recordings are mezzos, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was a mezzo. She was actually making really good use of her chest voice in this piece mm-hmm. of
yes.
low notes.
Yeah.
That made it for a really cool character to the way that she performed this
yeah.
piece.
Yeah. It's interesting that you both said what you did about them being fun, because one of the mentions that the in the foreword to the score by the general director of the American Opera Projects is the thing that most drew us to Gilda for this project was her affinity for simple stories, especially ones that have a black mood or sad central theme, mm-hmm. but are brightened by the narrator's clear-eyed storytelling or by an ending highlighting the silver lining of a dark cloud. And some of this poetry is very dark.
Yeah,
I mean, the second one is talking about, well, the first one says, I'm smart but timid. I want, you know, I'm in this bubble. I don't know if I'll ever break out.
I see the violence in my community.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then the second one talks about crackheads stealing right? their jump ropes. So... yeah, but again, then it's kids that are telling a story and they're saying, yes, this is my life, but it's my life, and it's not necessarily a dark place to be. It's just where I'm from.
Right. It's just where it's in their environment, and I think you can get that very honestly. I think that is really, really interesting that Gilda Lyon set these kids poems, these kids texts mm-hmm. to music, because that's some of the way you can get a most honest appraisal of a situation is yes. if you ask a kid about it.
Yeah, we so want to do that with our music.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And be like, sit down and listen to some out-call songs.
I was going
to
say, you guys right. do shows. I mean, you guys, I know that you do Frozen songs.
Right.
You do like a Frozen songs concert, and do you guys do any other like kid concerts?
I think that's really the only build one, right?
Mm-hmm. We're doing that next week, though. This will be broadcast well after that. But yeah it's that's funny, but we put our own twist on it.
Yeah.
We don't change the music, but we do like a great script.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's really fun, and we have a lot of kid fans.
We
out-call
do
fans.
Have
we have
kid
a, we
fans.
Have a lot of yeah, really devoted. fans.
No, actually, when Britt and I were at when we were doing Sancta Susanna,
uh-huh.
So background for listeners, Britt and I were doing a performance of an opera at the Baltimore Symphony. So this is I guess that's all the context you need in there. But we walked outside and we ran into some of your younger fans.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Great. Yeah. So great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what I wanted to say about this, and this is kind of a bit of a transition into the piece that I brought. So see, there's only two of you here, and we normally talk about three pieces. And so that means I'm on the spot to bring
yes.
a piece in. And I bring this duo who I am talking up as this pop duo, and we bring two clearly classical pieces. Of course, the second of which leans more into pop than the previous one. And I think this third one that we're going to talk about leans the most in, I would say for sure leans the most into pop music. And in fact, the liner notes on the CD of this recording, he talks about the recording actually, it's called Scandal. And it is an album of dance-inspired pieces. The composer Francesco Tristano and Alice Sarah Ott, both of them are pianists, and they both play on this recording.
Mm-hmm.
And this piece called A Soft Shell Groove, and it is very clearly based on modern electronic dance music. And what he says is actually it is based on modern electronic dance music. And that's all I'm going to say about it for now. We can get into my opinions on modern music and how it needs to relate to classical music, mm-hmm. how it should relate to classical music. And we're going to listen to the piece now. If you have listened to the piece already, awesome. If you have not, it's not a very long piece, so you can just pause us and go listen to it, and we'll be right back. Or you can listen to it after we're done talking about it, so you have some words to put to your thoughts about the piece. I hope you develop your own as well, and we'll be right back after we listen to A Soft Shell Groove here on Pause and Listen. As is quite common for contemporary musicians, Francesco Tristano is also a specialist in Baroque music. He composes for both traditional classical and electronic instruments. Welcome back to Pause and Listen. We've just been listening to A Soft Shell Groove by Francesco Tristano. He performed that piece with Alice Sarah Ott. It's a work for two pianos. And I brought the work, so I want to hear what you guys think about it first.
I don't know if I could dance to that.
Yeah? Soft shell. Do we know why?
Soft shell crabs?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
You know,
and now I want to eat some.
Oh, maybe
some.
That's how a soft shell crab would dance.
Or soft shoe?
Maybe. Actually, that is a good idea. I mean, considering all of... I mean, I could clearly discern the danceability of that piece.
Yeah.
Although I'm often one to argue that a lot of music that doesn't immediately come off as danceable is danceable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
Yeah. So I'm always able to find like the dance beat in something, even though somebody else might say, how can you dance to this at all? This is just,
oh yeah.
People are just going to sit in the chairs and not do anything at all.
Or it's the best kind of dancing because it doesn't have to be a particular step. You can just kind of flail around, which is my preference.
It's dancing that doesn't require dancing instructions.
There's movement. Right. I love the movement. And I think it's cool that there's two pianos. That's amazing. That's just such a cool feat.
What I wonder about, and funny that you talk about feet, but you spelled it F-E-A-T, and I was talking about F-E-E-T.
Oh, puns.
And about... and stomping and this whatever kind of slapping that happens in like so about halfway through this piece. I don't know if he wrote it into the piece or if he and Alice Sarah Ott were just getting into it when they were playing it. I don't know if that's in the score. Which it you know that's kind of seems to me something like. Say like a Glenn Gould recording when he would just be like singing to himself as he plays. That's just like
I never noticed that.
I like that. I like that. It gives it some. It makes it relatable.
It's the poppy classical version of Glenn Gould muttering to himself as he plays Bach.
I love that. Yeah, but Glenn Gould never did a fade out.
Yes, that's true. But you know what? None of those composers, I guess they didn't think of the idea of doing a fade out. And of course, in a lot of popular music, a fade out is used because they ran out of ideas.
Right. Who do you think would do a fade out now? Like,
you're talking about composers?
Yeah, like of the whatever, you know, Beethoven. Beethoven would probably do a fade out.
Beethoven probably do a fade out now. Mozart would definitely do a fade out.
You think
now.
So? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know who would do a fade out now? Johann Strauss Jr.
He
would
really?
Absolutely do a fade out.
The confidence. I believe you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And John Philip Sousa. All the Walt.
Oh, that's funny to think about that. That guy.
No, I mean, although for Sousa, actually, a fade out could be like the band is marching away.
Yes! Did Sousa write like everything for wind ensemble? Is that who that is?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
He's the march king, whereas Strauss is the waltz king.
Oh, you couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like both of those kinds of music are the kind of music from that period that would have used a fade out in their time if that were a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Of course. I mean, that's not to like talk shit on pop music today. I mean,
we've done some fade outs.
Yeah, just a couple though. Just a couple.
Honestly,
two. Wait,
what was the other one?
Just one.
I think it's Stay.
Just Stay, yeah.
I mean, I think the point though is that a fade out is not necessarily something that has to be used when you run out of ideas.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I think there's actually this metal band that I really like called Deaf Heaven. They actually use fade outs at the end of all three of their major albums. And I actually talked to the frontman about that back when I was doing college radio. And he was saying, it was basically just a way to give an unfinished feel to it, not because we ran out of ideas for it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, we used it in our one song called Stay. And I think where our idea was like, oh, the song is always happening.
Right. And there's not an end to it. Yeah. There's not an end to it.
And that actually kind of adds to the theme of stay.
Totally. I
mean, the sentiment remains there of the song, even though the song may have ended.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And which kind of sounds trite and cheesy, but I think, you know, just because something is trite does
not. Oh, yeah. We need a little bit of that in the world.
I mean, there's plenty of cheesy pop music. There was certainly plenty of cheesy music in the late 19th century mm-hmm. that we were just talking about.
That's true.
So I wouldn't even call this piece cheesy by any regard.
No.
But I can definitely see, like, you know, standard classical listeners cringing at it because
really? It's very hip. I think it's very hip.
Absolutely. But I mean, I can imagine somebody saying that it's hip in a way that they are blatantly trying to sound like they don't know how to use that word.
Yes. Okay. Got
and
it.
And talk about the piece.
Right.
And think, oh, it's nice.
Yeah.
It's
yes,
a pop
right.
song. Oh, it's not a real piece of classical music.
Right.
It doesn't, mm-hmm. it doesn't have this kind of form or structure. And mm-hmm. I mean, I heard all that kind of conversation when hearing people talk about another recent pop influenced debatably classical piece of music that there was certainly a lot of debate about, and there were a lot more problems to that debate than just whether or not it sounded like classical music, because mm-hmm. there were a lot of undertones that I was not very appreciative
of. Yeah, that
of.
Always, that's what happens when you open the conversation up like that. The point of the conversation somehow goes by the wayside, and it's an opinion fest.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I think these conversations are important to have. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why I did this whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is important. But I saw a great tweet today. I wish I could remember it. But it was something to the effect of, let's take all this, you know, what is so wrong with asking a question, an obvious question, especially in classical music, especially if we're trying to grow this audience and get people, of the younger blood listening and interested and invested.
Absolutely. You know? And when you think about it, I mean, classical music used to always use popular music of its
yes.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just this great divide that happened in the 20th century with the advent of the recording industry. Mm-hmm. And classical composers were like, oh, we can't have our music sounding like that. It needs to be convincingly classical. So, I mean, I don't think that would be the entire fault of people who would, like, say, compose atonal music. But there mm-hmm. was clearly,
right.
And I would not say there's any problem with atonal music either. I love atonal music.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a clear attempt by classical composers to distance themselves mm-hmm. from popular music, which I'm not going to it is very stupid. I'm not going to say it clearly, but there were probably inherent problems in that decision
mm-hmm,
as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then it got to the point where classical music became this thing that could not be similar to popular music of the time
mm-hmm.
because there was just this line in the sand that was drawn
yes.
that I think that needs to be just swept over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Especially because they got more money.
Yeah.
And we need that money.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, in any situation, in all seriousness, it's just like, why? Why separate? Especially, I mean, you look at organizations now and they're begging for these pop artists to come
right.
and collaborate with their orchestras. And
They want the pop artists to come to collaborate with their orchestras, but they don't want to write. They don't want to, some composers.
Right.
Obviously, Francesco Tristano is open to writing classical music
mm-hmm.
that sounds like pop music of today. But I think you find that disappointingly little.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In that classical composers, or rather, maybe a classical organization won't want to commission a work that sounds, that is composed in the classical style, but it sounds overtly like today's popular
mm-hmm,
music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's your lesson for today, classical world.
Definitely.
And that will do it for this episode of Pause and Listen. Britt, Melissa, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Our panel this episode was Outcalls, who are sopranos Britt Olsen Ecker and Melissa Wimbish, and I brought you our third piece on this episode. You can see more information about them and more music recommendations in the show notes and on pauseandlisten.com. Our co-creator and marketing manager is Michelle Mengel Search. I'm John Search, the creator, host, and producer, inviting you to join us for three more pieces of new music on the internet next time on Pause and Listen.